Welcome to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and your host is psychologist and best-selling author Dr. James Dobson. Yesterday, we spoke with Pastor Greg Laurie about the loss of his son, Christopher, and how that tragedy molded and shaped their family. His story also encompasses deep faith and how hope led them through the darkness, which we're going to hear about in just a moment, and particularly how Greg's new film project, Hope for Hurting Hearts, is planning to make its world premiere screening here very soon. Pastor Laurie is the senior pastor of Harvest Christian Fellowship in Riverside, California. He's also the founder of Harvest Crusades, where he's a featured speaker. He has a popular radio program called A New Beginning, which airs daily around the world. But before we get started today, if you missed the entirety of yesterday's broadcast, please visit drjamesdobson.org or our Family Talk app to get caught up. As for today, we're going to play a portion of yesterday's interview, which will tell of that fateful day that changed Pastor Laurie and his family forever. So here now on this edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk is Pastor Greg Laurie.
My wife and I are getting ready to celebrate our 39th wedding anniversary. Mm. We have two wonderful sons, Christopher and Jonathan. Christopher went through a time of being a prodigal and kind of partying. He never really turned his back on God, but he just had other things he was doing. And we always love him along with his brother. And finally, Christopher had made a recommitment to Christ. In fact, he was close friends with Ryan, who's in studio here with us, and they were at Biola together. And when Christopher, who was a very talented designer, as you remember, Ryan, was serving the Lord, he came to work for me at the church. So it was like my dream. I mean, Dr. Dobson, for you to sit here in your studio with your son, that's a dream come true.
It is a dream.
For a father to have your daughter, Danae, serving the Lord. And so here I have my oldest son working at the church as a lead designer. My youngest son, Jonathan, is helping out at the church as well. And one day, Christopher was on his way to work. It was July 24th, 2008. And my wife was having a Bible study with Christopher's wife and her mom, his mother-in-law. And I was babysitting their first child, Stella. Everything was great. It was a beautiful sunny day. And we didn't hear from Christopher. And Brittany, his wife, texted him. He didn't respond. And I sent him a text, "Where are you?" And I sent him an email, "Where are you?" I called him. He's not responding. What's going on? And I called the church and no one was returning my call. I knew something was wrong, very wrong. But it couldn't be that bad, I thought. It'll be all right. And finally, someone called me from the church and they said, "The associate pastors are coming down to see you." Well, I knew it wasn't good. And I was entering into a state of shock, and they arrived at my home and they told me that my son had died. And I just couldn't believe this was true. I did go into shock. I collapsed on the floor. And my house filled with all these people so quickly. And, you know, I know people mean well at a time like that, but they were trying to say the right words. But, you know, what are the right words? My son was suddenly gone, taken from me at the prime of his life, a father, a husband, serving the Lord. It's inexplicable, really. And I went up to my office, which is over my garage, and I had to get away from all these people, and I just collapsed on the floor and sort of did a loose paraphrase of the prayer of Job, where I just said, "Lord, you know, you gave him to us, and I give him back to you." And I cried out to God. And, you know, people have asked me, did I ever get mad at God? You know, I never did. Sadness, yes, but I couldn't be mad at the very God that held my son in his arms at that moment. And I had to cling to God, not to get through the day, not even to get through the hour, but to get through the next 5 minutes. It's a fate worse than death. As David said when his son Absalom died, even though Absalom was a bad boy, his father loved him. And he said, "I wish it had been me instead of him. And if I could have traded places, I would have gladly done it with my son so he could be home to kiss his wife and be with his daughter." But that was the hardest day of my life, and I still remember it vividly. And there it was, and it changed my life. Now my life, there's sort of two big marks of my life, before and after conversion. And now, quite frankly, it's before and after this event. I mark time by it. And Ryan was really gracious to get a hold of Brittany. He knew Brittany and Christopher. They were friends. And he got you on the phone and you took time to talk with us, a lot of time. In fact, Brittany was there. I was there. I remember it very vividly. And it really meant a great deal to me, you know, because a lot of people know your familiar voice on the air. We all come to feel like you're our doctor, you're our friend. But to have you speak personally to us really helped a lot. I want to thank you again for that publicly. But that was that day.
Mm. Well, you described falling on the floor really just kind of in a fetal position. It was like being hit by a blow right into the stomach. How long did it take you to begin to get on your feet, to begin to realize you could breathe again?
The pain was so continuous. It felt like I had a huge weight on my chest. I felt like I could literally die. In fact, I wouldn't even have minded if I died. I was never suicidal, but I was despondent and in deep depression. I am not a depressed person, nor was Christopher. You know, I have a pretty upbeat personality, but I went into a deep, deep valley of deep depression. And it was physical pain literally in my chest. And I just couldn't stop crying for days, just deep convulsions. Or you'd finally, and you know, the strange thing about crying is you felt better after a good cry. I learned to not fight it. You know, the Bible says, blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. And mm-hmm. I think it's very important to process pain properly. And I think if you don't mourn properly, it can be problematic later. But then, interestingly, as you go through the mourning process, when you start crying less and you start feeling a little better and your appetite partially returns, then you start feeling bad about feeling good. Mm-hmm. And then when you don't cry every day, you feel like, well, I'm not missing him as I ought to. But it is a healing process you go through. And just now, or in our last broadcast when we talked, and I choked up. I don't usually choke up when I tell the story. I can't control it. I just react as I react. But mm-hmm. I think it's going back in time and remembering that day and what an awful day it was. But God was with me on that day, you guys. And that's the thing I want to say, because people say, how have you done it? We admire your faith. Look, this is the bottom line. I am not a great, strong, spiritual person. I'm weak, but God was there. And faith is like a bridge, and you don't know if it's going to hold you up till you step onto it. Mm-hmm. And I put all of my weight in that bridge. And I'll tell you the truth. If that bridge was not there, if Christ was not there for me, I would have given up preaching and I'd have found something else to do. But he was there. And because he was there and he is there, I feel compelled to tell people that God will be there in your darkest day.
Yeah.
And you don't cry out against God. You cry out to God. You know, sometimes people say it's a sin to ask why of God. Well, I don't know. Jesus on the cross said, my God, why have you forsaken me?
Even he asked the word, why?
But the key is he said, my God.
Right.
It wasn't cutting off communication with God. It was mm-hmm. crying out to God. So sure. I say, bring your pain to God.
Greg, how different would it have been if you didn't know you were going to see Christopher again? I just imagine all those people out there who don't know the mm-hmm. Lord, who lose somebody like that. I don't know how they survive it. I really don't. Because they know that face, that voice, that persona, that relationship will never be revisited again.
That's true. And it is my hope that I will see him again in heaven. And then when heaven comes to earth, but until that day, I just take it a step at a time, and I have to trust in God, because it's catastrophic loss. It's, I don't know what to liken it to. You could say, you know, it's sort of like losing an arm or a leg, but it's more than that. One mm-hmm. person that lost three members of their family in a tragic car crash wrote in their book, quote, "We recover from broken limbs, not amputations. Catastrophic loss by definition precludes recovery. It will transform us or destroy us, but it will never leave us the same. There's no going back to the past, which is gone forever, only going ahead to the future, which is yet to be discovered," end quote. And mm-hmm. that is very accurate. It changes you.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, You wish you could have all the good things that come, and good things can come from pain. Good things can come from complete dependency upon God, obviously. I wish I could have all of that and my son, and then I would be living in a perfect world.
Right.
You have a younger son named Jonathan, who was also a bit of a prodigal, and the Lord used this event in his life.
He did, yeah. Christopher and Jonathan were very close. Though they were separated by 10 years, as they got older, they became very close. And Jonathan actually got into drugs and was partying, and he would open his heart up to Christopher and tell him things he didn't tell dear old dad. And Christopher said to him, the day before he died, Jonathan, what's it going to take to get your attention, to get right with God?
And that was the day?
The day before. And when Christopher went to be with the Lord, it just crushed Jonathan. And he said later, and now Jonathan is serving the Lord. He's on staff at our church and shares his testimony, and God has really put his hand on him. But Jonathan says that's unfortunately what it took. I'm not saying that this happened so Jonathan would get right with God. I think we make a mistake when we try to always find cause and effect. Like, oh, this bad thing happened, so this good thing can happen. Now, there are times in life when you can directly connect a good thing coming from a bad thing. Mm-hmm. But then there are times in life when things are bad, they'll always be bad. But despite the tragedy, God brings good.
Sure.
Sometimes people maybe misinterpret Romans 8:28, which says all things are working together for good to those that love God and are the called according to his purpose. It doesn't necessarily say God makes bad things good, but he brings good despite the bad.
Sure.
And this is what it took. It was the ultimate wake-up call for Jonathan. And he's shared this story many times, and it's a real tribute to his brother.
Yeah. Greg, you were saying earlier that you felt like you wished you could have died.
Yes.
Because then you'd be with Christopher. I was watching a documentary last night, and a guy who lost his son, and he said he contemplated suicide, and then the image of his other two sons came into play, and he said, I can't. I don't get to go there yet.
Yeah.
What were the challenges of grieving the loss of your son and yet having another son and trying to be a parent in the midst of your grief and trying to help him in his struggles? And on top of that, you've got your daughter-in-law, Brittany, and a granddaughter.
Yes.
And the pressure has to be overwhelming. You're a lead pastor and you're a husband and a father, and you've got to somehow lead this chaos.
Well, you just put one foot in front of the other and take it a day at a time, sometimes an hour at a time. You know, I think of that old hymn that says, I need thee every hour. And it's really true at times like that. But, you know, I also found in an interesting way my heart expanding and more love. I think when you lose someone that you love deeply, your appreciation for other ones that are still with you that you love only grows, you know. And I wanted to love them more, and I wanted to be there for them more and do everything I could for them. And the Bible says we are to comfort with the comfort we've been comforted with. And, you know, I met a couple that lost a child not long after Christopher went to be with the Lord, and they said something that stayed with me. They said, you know, Greg, we don't want to waste our pain. So I think that we recognize that whatever has happened in our life, though it may not make sense, can be used by God to bring him glory and to bring comfort to others. And everything in life is preparation for something else. So instead of fighting with it, just turn to God and know that there are people out there that are hurting. You know, it's been said, if you preach to hurting people, you'll never lack for an audience. And there's just a world full of people dealing with deep, deep pain.
Yeah.
And I feel like I want to help those people and give them perspective and talk about real hope.
I have read, Pastor, that there was a scripture that meant a lot to you. It's Colossians 3:1-4. Right at that time, how did that minister to you?
Yeah, Colossians talks about, you know, set your affection on things above, not on things of the earth. It's an interesting phrase because it could be translated, think on things above, or another real simple translation is think heaven. And, you know, what has really brought me a lot of comfort is just thinking about heaven. There's an outstanding book out there that has brought great comfort to me, written by a friend of mine named Randy Alcorn, and the book is called Heaven.
Yeah.
I think it's the finest book on the topic I've ever read. And what helped me reading that book was just realizing heaven is a real place. And I've always believed in heaven, but I've thought about it more deeply than I ever have before. It's not like, you know, you've heard about a place, but say you're going to take a trip there, so you do some research. And it's similar for me in heaven. I wonder, what is Christopher doing in heaven? What is heaven like?
Yeah.
Will I recognize him when I get there? What will we do when we get there? And so through my study of heaven, I'm actually writing a book on it right now. But through my study of it, it's altered my perspective. It's given me more of an eternal perspective. And those verses are not just directed toward people who've lost loved ones. They're directed towards all followers of Jesus.
Mm.
And I think it's important we think about these things deeply as Christians and get a greater eternal perspective on life.
Greg, I'm aware of part of the story that we haven't yet told, but one of the things is that you had a lot of dreams after Christopher left, a recurring dream.
Yeah.
Are you comfortable in talking about that?
My wife says she's envious because I dream about Christopher. My dreams are like movies. They're vivid. They have plot lines. It's unbelievable the crazy dreams I have. I've always dreamed a lot, but I would have this dream and circumstances would change, but the dream goes along these lines. We're all together as a family and Christopher is there. And it suddenly dawns on me, Christopher is there. And then I say to myself in the dream, this is a dream. But then I think, no, this is real. And he's just acting casual, like everything's normal. Nothing's out of the ordinary. But I'm saying, no, you've been gone, but you're here. And I'm so happy to talk to him. And in every dream, he has to leave. And I'm saying, don't leave. Don't leave. Please don't leave. And then I wake up crying because it's that dream is, you know, I'm dealing with the reality of him being with me again and the way he's sort of taken out of my life. And I want him so much there in my life. And so that is a dream I've had in varying ways and sort of different settings. It's almost always the same dream. He's there. It's great. But he's leaving me again, and I can't stop him from leaving. And I always wake up. My heart is racing. Mm. I'm in a panic. And there it is.
You know, that's a very common reaction, and I had it also. I was extremely close in a healthy way to my father when he suddenly died. Mm. I was 43 years of age, I believe, when he died. And I was up speaking in Chico, California on a Sunday morning when I got the call. In fact, they waited till the break time and then called me into the pastor's office and told me my dad was gone. Mm. It was that sudden. And I jumped on a plane and I went to Kansas City. And I got to the mortuary. And for some reason, the rest of the family thought that I wanted to be with my dad alone before his casket, and everybody disappeared. I looked around. They were all gone. Mm. They closed the door, and I was in there with him. And I began talking to him and thanking him and saying, Dad, did you really have to leave? And it was the most intense emotion I have ever had in my life. My mother died 11 years later, and it was not the same. I loved my mother, but it was not the same. But the emotional impact of the tears that I shed on that day had an effect on me that showed up in my dreams for 15 years.
Wow.
My dad was always there, and he never talked. He never said a word in 15 years.
Wow.
He was just there, and then, like you, he was gone. And I would wake myself up crying.
Yeah.
And it was the most intense crying that I don't have that in my waking hours.
Yeah.
It was sobbing.
Yeah.
It was deep anguish prayer.
Yes.
And now if my dad shows up in my dreams, it's more positive and it is maybe conversation.
Right.
But for that time, it was just an ache that is indescribable. And the way dreams operate is things that are intense in your waking hours do have a way of showing up. Yeah. At one time or another, you may not even recognize them because they're disguised,
right.
But they show up in your dreams, and yeah. Then you realize, I know what that was about.
Yes.
Yeah. But that's apparently what you went through.
Yeah, I went through that, and it changes you. Grief changes you, and a number of things came out of it. One is that I think I'm more compassionate toward others who are hurting. I would think, as a pastor, I've talked to so many people who've lost loved ones, even children, and I've come as close to it as you possibly could. And I think of things I've said to people in the past, and I look back and I realize I didn't have a clue. And I don't think that I said the wrong things, but now I just maybe say them differently. Mm-hmm. I realize now less is more. I certainly don't have to explain it. I just need to be with them. I need to weep with those that weep, have prayer with them, give them some passages that have helped me. But I think that what happens internally is you start seeing things differently. And one of those things is a greater compassion, as I said. And another one is it got a little tougher. And things that I feared before, I thought, I'm not afraid of that anymore. You know why? What's worse than this?
Yeah.
Nothing. Mm. So I've been taking some crazy, bold steps of faith in my last few years. I mean, I'm 60 years old. A lot of my friends are already kind of moving toward almost a retirement mindset. And I'm like, I feel like I'm almost just getting started, mm-hmm. because I'm saying, let's go try something out of the ordinary. So since then, we've done some bold things, including two crusades that we've done at Dodger Stadium, which I would have been way apprehensive about doing because LA is such a tough area. We've started a second church that I'm pastoring, effectively two churches now, but I felt very led by the Lord to do it. That's in Orange County as well as in Riverside, where I've been 40 years. And we did this Harvest America thing that we talked about in an earlier program, which is going to happen this year in Philadelphia. But I've been willing to take risks because I think, what have I got to lose? Worst case scenario, it doesn't go that well. So?
Right.
What if it does go well?
Mm-hmm.
And, and also when I hear of someone who've lost a loved one, where before I might have walked away from it, now I'm willing to walk right into it. I'll go right into the pain because I feel like maybe they'll listen to me because of what I've gone through, and I can help them know, you're going to survive this. You can survive this. You don't feel like it, but you can.
Again, I'm right where you are because we have just done the new film series. It's called Building a Family Legacy.
Yes.
It is the second, as I see it in my professional life. The first was Focus on the Family, 1978. And now this one has been done. And that's a major undertaking at this stage in my life. It's an 8 yes. DVD series, and we put an awful lot into it, and we'll be out next April.
Right.
Well, there are times when the brevity of this program is very inconvenient. Mm-hmm. What was it that Al Gore called his movie an inconvenient truth?
Yes.
The short program
yeah.
is an inconvenient truth. But I just want to take a second to talk about your new film
yeah.
called Hope for Hurting Hearts. And we'll pick up right with that next time and let our listeners even hear a portion of it. Explain in 25 seconds what that is.
Hope for Hurting Hearts is a film that is designed to be a tool or a resource that you would place in the hands of a person who's just heard the worst news imaginable. Maybe it's a loss of a loved one. Maybe it's bad news from a doctor. But quite frankly, I think this film will speak to anyone out there who is experiencing any degree of pain.
Mm. Loved having you here.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You've been listening to our good friend, Pastor Greg Laurie, here on this Family Talk broadcast, and I so appreciate his honesty and his authenticity. And to those of you listening, if that's you, if you're suffering in your pain alone, please reach out to someone near you. There is no shame in asking for help or even speaking with a counselor over your grief. I know I have many times. Please don't attempt to go through a difficult season like the loss of a loved one by yourself. That's why the Lord gave us community, so we can share each other's burdens. So if you need help, we can set you up with a counselor in your area, or we can pray with you right now. Our number is 877-732-6825. Again, 877-732-6825. And before we sign off here, make sure to visit drjamesdobson.org for a link on how to register to see Hope for Hurting Hearts. The world premiere screening takes place July 10th through the 14th. That means tomorrow. So make sure to go online as soon as you're near a computer and get signed up. I've seen Greg's first film, Lost Boy. It is so impactful. I know this one will be as well. So I'll watch it this weekend, you watch it this weekend, and next week we can talk about it on Facebook. And keep in mind, we are a completely listener-supported ministry, so if you can partner with us financially, we would greatly appreciate it. You can do so online at drjamesdobson.org, via our Facebook page or our Family Talk app. Again, we appreciate you joining us for another great day here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. We hope you'll join us tomorrow for the conclusion of this conversation on Hope for Hurting Hearts. That's next time with Greg Laurie on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.